I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk with an icon of Indiana politics and history, former Congressman Lee Hamilton. During his long career in the U.S. House of Representatives, Hamilton earned an international reputation as a voice for reason, consensus, and conciliation. We'll discuss his long career and the state of politics and public discourse today. Please join this historic conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881, email nolimits at WFYI.org, find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today with an icon in Indiana politics and history, former Indiana Congressman Lee Hamilton, a Democrat from southern Indiana. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can email us at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Representative Hamilton, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be with you, John.
It's good to have you here. You are talking from a studio down at on the campus of Indiana University. I want to make that clear. We're not sitting in the studio together, but we appreciate you talking with us today. I'd like to start first by, you've had a long and distinguished career in politics. I'm always intrigued by the motivations of people who decided to enter into public service. Could we talk a little bit about why you decided that politics might be a calling for you?
Well, John, I came to that conclusion rather late. I went to Indiana University Law School after attending DePauw University for my undergraduate degree. I remember very clearly walking across the stage to get my degrees, both at DePauw and even at the law school commencement, and not knowing exactly what I wanted to do. And I think being a bit jealous of those who were more directed and clear about their future path than I. I practiced law for a period of years in Chicago and in Indiana. Decided I really wasn't all that enthusiastic about the practice of law. Began to get a little bored with it in many ways. Saw my interest in politics and public affairs and policy increasing. So I began from my law office to think about how to get into the policy-making business. I decided the best way to do that was to enter politics, and that's what I did in 1964.
What when you say you were intrigued by public affairs and that your interest was growing, what were the things that intrigued you and that pulled you toward it?
Well, part of it was just the sheer challenge of it. Problems come at us with such complexity and rapidity that you can't help but be intrigued, if not overwhelmed, by how to solve them. And I began to get more and more interested in the question of how do you make this country work? When I went to high school, we had 130 million people approximately in the country, and now well over 300 million. But the country has not only become larger in number, but much more diverse. We're a long, long way from the few million people who resided in the country at its founding. And I became energized, focused on the question of how do we get along with one another? to move this country forward. People were discouraged about politicians and political institutions, about the country back then, probably more so even today. And so the challenge of it was a big attraction to me. I came in with the sense that I wanted to try to further the success of the country, its direction and its future success, and to make my contributions where I could. I don't think I had any exaggerated expectations about that. I knew the complexity of it, the difficulty of it, but I felt I wanted to be a part of trying to solve some of the problems we had.
You mentioned when you came into office, when you were elected to the House in 1964, and then you took office in 1965, as you've alluded to, that was a deeply divided time in this country's history. The Vietnam War was going on. The struggles over civil rights, particularly for African Americans, were taking place. It was much like today, with the added, you know, trauma of the fact that there were a series of largely political assassinations that took place then, too. Was it because of that? Because your reputation always was that you were a consensus builder, someone who sought that common ground and tried to expand upon it. Did you see that as your role from the beginning, or is that something that developed once you got your feet on the ground there and took a look at what was happening?
Well, I've always felt that the greatest political skill that is needed back then, still true, is the ability to build a consensus behind a solution to a problem. Politics is really all about a search for a remedy. I know there's a lot of noise in politics. There's a lot of distractions. People get upset with one another in their positions. A lot of money poured into politics from all directions. Many things can distract you. But the core of the business of a politician is to try to figure out how to find a solution, or at least a partial solution, to a public problem. That policy issue has been the center of my focus. I quickly began to understand that no person in this country, not even a president, has power, all power. Everybody has to work with other people. There are untold numbers of points of view. It's very, very hard to reconcile them. And yet we have to do it. The only way we can do it is with the system we have. There isn't any alternative really for us. We've got to use the system we have. And so using that system, we have to try to find a solution to a problem. That means at its core, negotiation, compromise, search for a remedy, and that becomes the core of consensus building.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with former Indiana Congressman Lee Hamilton from his offices in the campus of Indiana University. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So you saw your focus always as trying to move things together and get people to work together. That's a difficult role for an incoming, a freshman congressman to do, particularly in the mid-1960s when seniority meant perhaps even more than it does now in Congress. How did you start building that reputation and moving toward your goal of doing that?
Well, your work environment in the Congress is basically in the committee. and maybe even in the subcommittee. And I quickly recognized that the divisions, which, as you mentioned, were sharp, keen at that time, meant there had to be somebody working to bridge those divisions. And I picked up that role beginning in the subcommittee, really, of the House Foreign Affairs Committee and a couple of other committees I was on, and saw that the first thing I had to do was establish a good relationship, a good dialogue, if you would, with the minority party at the time, the Republicans. The Democrats were in the majority, and develop friendships across the aisle, develop a relationship of trust, and dialogue to discuss the problem. So many of our problems come up about because we don't talk to one another, or at least we don't talk to one another enough and in real depth. So I saw that as the way to go, and my first efforts were on legislation pending in the House Foreign Affairs Committee relating, obviously, to international events and solutions to those events. I picked up the same role, really, because there wasn't anybody else to fill it in the full committee, and eventually in the final stages of the legislative process in the conference committees. So it kind of grew, the role, and as you picked up seniority, as I did, your position in the House is elevated. You become more visible. And I got on that path and stuck to it because there was a great need for it.
Did you have any mentors or role models that you looked to in trying to carve out that kind of path for yourself in Congress?
Well, I had many. One stands out immediately was Wilbur Mills, who was the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, the most powerful committee in the House. He was from Arkansas. Let me give you a quick example. He came into the Democratic caucus one day in 1965, and he said, "We've got a bill in the Ways and Means Committee. It's called Medicare. We, the Democrats, have enough votes to pass that bill easily, but I do not recommend we do it." He said, "What I recommend is you give me the authority to talk to Republicans and see if I can bring some of them on board, perhaps adopt some of their views, maybe have to reject some of the others, and see if we can get a bill that has not just Democratic support, but Republican support as well." That's quite a lesson to me. We passed the Medicare bill with solid support from both parties, bipartisan, and I think had an easier time of implementation than we otherwise would have. But he showed me that the way to legislate effectively is a bipartisan effort. That doesn't mean you get unanimity. That's almost impossible to get with any controversial issue. But it does mean that you make the effort and you sit down and talk, and you find out what the commonalities are, what things the other side can accept and what they simply cannot accept, they reject, and see if you can inch forward incrementally. We make progress in this country inch by inch, not mile by mile, and that's the way we did it. So Mills was a mentor. There were many others. I quickly saw that the most effective members of the House were not necessarily the ones who gave the most impassioned speeches, but those who approached their colleagues in a civil, respectful manner and who would talk with them and who would reach out to build constituencies or, if you want to put it this way, to build majorities by adding different points of view. That's what I mean by the consensus-building skill. It's needed in almost every institution I can think of, not just politics. But it's a very important skill in a representative democracy to make the country work. And that, after all, was our fundamental purpose. This is a marvelous country. We've had a terrific history. We stand unparalleled in many ways in our leadership across the world. High in esteem.
Representative Hamilton, I'm going to have to step in because we've got to take a break right now, but we'll be back very shortly. We are talking with former Congressman Lee Hamilton here on No Limits today. If you want to join the conversation, please call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today, this is a special No Limits, we are talking with former U.S. Representative Lee Hamilton, longtime Democrat from Southern Indiana who served in the Congress for more than 30 years. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Representative Hamilton, I apologize. I had to cut you off there, so we go to a break. I wanted to give you a chance to finish your thought, if you wanted to. Okay, it appears that for the moment we have lost Representative Hamilton. We will try to figure out. Okay, we will see what is going on there. We have a Facebook message from a listener named Mary that relays a comment about the kind of impact that Representative Hamilton has had through the years. Mary writes, as a 12-year-old, I was in youth for Hamilton. It was one of the most exciting and fun summers of my childhood. I traveled all over Southern Indiana and learned a great deal about our state and politics. I continue to have great admiration for Congressman Lee Hamilton and his accomplishments for Indiana and our country. Okay, Representative Hamilton, welcome back.
Thank you.
Certainly. I wanted to give you a chance. Did you hear the message from Mary? She talked about how she was in youth for Hamilton when she was 12 years old and said it was one of the great experiences of her life.
Well, I'm delighted to know that. I put together a lot of youth organizations. I admired their energy and passion for the process, and I probably ended up learning a lot more from them than they did from me. That's a great story she had to tell.
We've also gotten an email from a listener named Ben that addresses the point I think you were making before we went to the break. And our email address, if you want to join the conversation by email, is nolimits@wfyi.org. Ben writes, Mr. Hamilton, the dysfunction in government is on daily display. Do you feel that the constant bickering we see today is a recent phenomenon, or was it as pervasive when you entered politics? Is it possible it was present but didn't receive the spotlight that our current media streams magnify?
Well, I think it's a good observation. Look, we've always had major differences. Partisanship is high at any time in the history of the Congress, sometimes higher than others. So nobody should fall off their chair because there are differences of opinion in the United States Congress. There should be differences of opinion in a country of this size and diversity. I do think in recent years the intensity of our politics has ratcheted up. People are better informed, more money in the process, media more divided, a lot more interest groups involved, a lot more at stake. And as this intensity has picked up, the intensity of the debate is part of that process. That's not all bad. There are some good qualities to it. I think more people have been brought into the process, more organizations, and you get the expression of the diversity of America more clearly articulated and defined. But it makes reaching agreement a little bit harder. So, yes, the bickering has always been there, the dialogue, you want some of that, but it has to be kept in range and must always be conducted, or should at least always be conducted, in an atmosphere of civility. That's critically important. It's the lubricant. Civility is the lubricant to move the interactions necessary in politics forward.
We are talking with former Representative Lee Hamilton about his long and storied career here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Myra has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Myra, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. I apologize for the background noise, but I'm in line at Shapiro's.
Well,
I was in my car.
Enjoy the corned beef, I guess.
Yes, exactly. Well, Representative Hamilton, for many years, you and Senator Lugar were kind enough to join the press club for an evening of discussion about current politics. And I just wondered, it seemed as if you had a great relationship with Senator Lugar. And I just wondered what things you had. I know there were things that where you disagreed, but I wonder if you could talk for a minute about things that you shared in common.
Well, I have
Thanks very much for the call, Myra.
Thank you, Myra. I have a wonderful relationship with Dick Lugar. I esteem him very highly, as Hoosiers do. He's an icon in Indiana politics and should be. Marvelous contributions to the state and the nation. He and I, of course, are in different political parties. We worked most closely together on national security and international relations. Although we're different parties, the thing that brought us together was we very much agreed that the United States should play an active role in the world, that the United States had a lot to bring to world discussion, that our example was followed by many, and that American leadership was critical to solving a lot of problems in the world. So we had the common base of recognizing the importance of the U.S. role in the world and wanting to make that contribution as healthy as we could. That really began in meetings between the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, of which he was a part, and the House Foreign Affairs Committee, where I served, and over a period of years grew quite close. And after we both left the Congress, that relationship has stayed very firm, and we've been able to work together frequently. And just the other day, we were at Greencastle DePaul University to talk with students and faculty and townspeople there about many of these problems.
Your relationship with Richard Lugar goes back even before his arrival in Washington, D.C. And I know we talked about this last week because I came down to interview you for an upcoming documentary we're doing on Senator Lugar's career. But the thing that struck me, you actually offered him some counsel as he was getting ready to enter into public life. And I wonder, could you tell that story? Because I wonder if things like that happen today, where even though you're different parties, you say, sure, you're a promising young man. I'll help you if I can.
Well, Dick and I first met at the church, St. Luke's Methodist Church in Indianapolis, where my brother served as pastor. And I came up to talk to some of the groups there and met Dick at that time. He was just considering moving into public life. I think at that time he was thinking about running for school board. He was a businessman in Indianapolis. And he and I hit it off. We talked a lot about different things. Among those things was politics. And he and I chatted about what you have to do to get elected in Indiana. It's a very early start to the relationship, a firm foundation, a common interest that grew over the years. I don't know whether I helped him or hurt him, frankly, in my advice, but I gave it freely, and it probably was worth about what he paid for it.
You've talked about the fact that that you made a deliberate attempt to reach out to members of the other party to develop friendships and relationships there. And I'm thinking of a conversation I had with former Indianapolis Mayor William Hudnut, who also was a member of Congress for a term in the early 70s. And he was talking about his very close relationship with former United States Representative Andy Jacobs, and the point where they would stay in each other's houses and all of that. Their wives talked all the time and all of that sort of stuff. And he said, they were different parties. They even had run against each other, but they had an enduring bond. And he said, one of the things that's wrong with this country is I just don't see that many of those kinds of relationships anymore, where it's the friendship ultimately that holds you together through the difficult times. Do you think that that's a fair assessment? Do you see as many of those kinds of friendships across party lines as when you were in Congress?
I think I don't see as many. I do see some, and I hope the trend continues toward the kind of relationship you identified with Bill Hudnut and Andy Jacobs. I remember one time on the floor of the House of Representatives, I made a bad parliamentary mistake. I was so new to the game, I didn't even recognize I had made it. And Charlie Halleck, who was identified as a fiercely partisan Republican member, one of the leaders of the Republican Party in the House, recognized that I had made a mistake, and he sent Congressman Bill Bray, a Republican from Indiana, down into the well of the House to tell me I had made a mistake and how to correct it. It was a remarkable display of compassion on a young member of the Congress, me, who was making a bit of a fool of himself. Bill Bray came down and said, Lee, you just did this. That's a mistake. And the way to correct it is to do this, which I did, and I recovered. But I never forgot the magnanimous step taken by Charlie Halleck and Bill Bray. At the end of the day, we're all in this together. We want the country to succeed. And we certainly have our differences, and they can be sharp and difficult to resolve. But if you have the right mental attitude, let's solve the problem. Let's see if we can help the country move forward. You can overcome those differences. And the examples you mentioned, Bill Hudnut, Andy Jacobs, Bill Bray, Charlie Halleck, are part of the process. Now, those relationships still exist today, I believe. I hope they do. I want to see them prosper. But it's the core of moving forward.
Gotten an email question from a listener named Beth. And if you want to join this conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or, again, as Beth has done, send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Beth writes, please relay heartfelt thanks for leadership and statesmanship to Lee Hamilton. Please ask how we may influence the binary crosstalk to be more considered rather than talking at each other from a defensive posture.
Well, look, we all have our friends. We all have our groups in which we have influence. We all have contacts with one kind or another with public officials. And I think it's important that we convey our attitudes here and let people know what you expect of them in terms of civility, bipartisan cooperation, and public discourse. Obviously, there are a lot of issues out there that all of us feel strongly about, and that's good, and we should feel strongly about these issues. But democracy is not a result. A democracy is a process, and it's a there's no such thing as a final achievement in democracy. It calls always for striving, trying to make a more perfect union. And so that attitude has to prevail in trying to bring people together. There's some marvelous examples of it. Often pointed out, Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan. Tip, the great liberal from Massachusetts, Ronald Reagan, the conservative from California. I sat in on many meetings between the two of them, one as speaker, the other president. The differences were sharp, not easy to reconcile. But I cannot ever remember an uncivil word being spoken. And with those two master politicians, they always tried to move the conversation towards getting a result. And if things really got off course, one or the other of them would tell a good Irish story. And the competition between the two of them became not politics, but who could tell the best Irish joke. And the whole attitude in the room would change. The levity helped. So you got to remember that this is a process, after all, that we're involved in. It's a complicated, difficult process, challenging. It's the only process we got. And if we're going to solve big-time problems, Social Security, retirement, climate change, or deficits or whatever bother you, you got to bring the right attitude to the table. And if you don't, if you're hostile, if you're mean-spirited, if you're nasty, you're not going to get very far.
We've got just a little bit less than a minute before we have to take our next break. Do you ever have moments, I mean, you're sitting in the same room with Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan while they're, you know, shaping the future of the country, where you had to pinch yourself and say, how did I get here?
More than once, many times. But then I always thought that what a privilege it was. And I had that privilege only because the voters of Indiana let me have it. And I had to make the most of it. And that meant, in my mind, trying to be constructive. I don't mean that I always agreed with them, but I had a seat at the table. And they listened to me, and I had my opportunity to put my 2 cents worth in. That was a high privilege that I will never forget, and it came to me only because Hoosiers let me have it.
We are talking with former Congressman Lee Hamilton, longtime member of the U.S. House of Representatives, a Democrat from southern Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. We're going to be back in just a minute. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking with former Indiana Congressman Lee Hamilton, a Democrat from southern Indiana who served for more than 30 years in the U.S. House of Representatives. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Reach out to us by email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Track us down on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or find us on Twitter at WFYI. Representative Hamilton, I want to ask if I could, how long it took you to sort of figure out that you were good at this, that kind of consensus building was a skill set you had. Was it something you just realized when you got there to Congress, or did that develop over time?
Developed it over time, came about principally because I recognized the need for it. I guess it came to me that my mental attitude, my approach to these problems was conducive to the kind of thing that the democratic system demands of us. I don't know that I ever thought that I had it. What impressed me more than else was how hard it was to get anything to move and to get the country moving in the right direction. So whatever skill I had, I kept thinking it wasn't enough to really accomplish what needed to be done. And it impressed upon me that no one of us ever gets the job done that we seek to do. And that means we have to bring others along after us or with us who can carry on the work. This gets around to the point of the importance of civic education and teaching our young people and older ones, too, for that matter, what kind of sets of skills they need to move forward. And I express a concern here. There are a lot of wonderful teachers in our state, and I hope that we spend more and more time in the classroom and elsewhere recognizing how important the citizen is in our process and giving those citizens the kind of skill sets that are needed. We've been talking about some of them this program. In order to be successful as a community, as a neighborhood, as a county, as a city, state, or nation, we need to be very conscious of the necessity of bringing along not just well-educated citizens, but citizens who know how to make the system work and get things done.
We are talking with former United States Representative Lee Hamilton. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Margaret has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Margaret, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a question for Representative Hamilton. It's wonderful to hear him talk about how they used to work together and form friendships, and I would love to think that that's still going on, but I get the impression that with the Supreme Court decision a few years ago about campaign financing, that it's just all about the money and that they can't vote their conscience, that they're simply voting as the group that's backing them asks them to vote. And I'd love to hear his comments about that. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, Margaret, and the question.
Well, I'm very worried about the disproportionate influence of money in the process. The caller is right, of course. Now, you got to look at this in different perspectives. It costs a lot of money to run an election. I'm not a wealthy man, never have been. I had to raise several million dollars every year or so to run for office. The politician, the campaigner needs money. Where do you get the money? You got to go to the people, and there are, unfortunately, a very small percentage of people that feel they're able to give or at least give generously to political endeavors. So I have a considerable sympathy, if you would, for the politician who has to raise money and run for office. But the system today is groaning because money plays such a disproportionate role. And there are groups in the country that take advantage of that, put a lot of money into campaigning. That's publicly available from time to time, although we need to increase transparency. But I appreciate a citizen like Margaret who is sensitive to the impact of money on the process. These people that have money, you ask them why they contribute, they'll tell you they want access to the politician. That's certainly true. But they want more than access, oftentimes, and that is they want to influence the result of the process. Nothing wrong with that. That's part of free speech, part of the system. But it does this that worries me. It diminishes the voice of the ordinary voter, and I that's why I worry about it. If you give person A, who contributes a lot of money through the process, and thereby increases A's voice in the process and A's influence in the process, what it means, you diminish the voice of others who are not able to give that kind of money for whatever reason. And that distorts your representative democracy in a unhealthy way, I believe. So this is a hard thing to shake through. There are a lot of interests involved here. We're not talking about illegality for the most part, but we are talking about a serious stress point in our representative democracy. I believe we need to diminish the role of money. I don't think you can eliminate it. You certainly need more public disclosure. I think you also need some input, as we have today in presidential races, from the public treasury. Many people disagree with that, but I'm open to other suggestions. We have to be alert to the diminishing punch, power, of the ordinary voter who's not able to contribute.
We are talking with former Congressman Lee Hamilton here on No Limits. Art, you are on the air.
Thank you. Sir. I have to say, of all the very, very, very fine programs, John, that you've had over the years that I've listened to and called in occasionally on, I think this is very possibly the finest. And also, in some ways, of the greatest value possible, not only to the people in Indiana, but to all the United States. And I think that we ought to find a way to produce transcripts of this program today, that they should be transmitted out into the educational system so that kids starting in very early years, maybe even second and third or fourth grade, or should be given the opportunity to be exposed to all these thoughts and concepts and have times to discuss them with teachers or some outside people who might come in and facilitate the process. They need to be exposed to these concepts repeated times so that there's enough cumulative assimilation into their very being that they understand what the process really means. I was blessed by virtue of being in the Indianapolis JCs for about 12 years to participate in the Indiana JC state model legislature program for five consecutive years, starting out first year just as an observer practically, and then having a bill that went through finally in the second year, all the way to being Senate, to being Speaker of the House at the time that Phil Borst was President pro tem of the Senate in the JC and state model legislature. And after we had that process, then the bills that passed, all of those of us who were a part of that whole people process would meet with the speakers, with all the people from the House and the Senate, and they would give us a critique of how well we did. And I thought it was just a fabulous thing. But I think we need to have more of that so that more people understand the process and how it really works. so they can all be individual multiplier effects within their milieu and you know, people that they have intimate contact with.
All right,
about the process many times.
Yeah, let me jump in because I you've said something I think that's important here, and I want to. We've got limited time with Representative Hamilton, so I want to get his thoughts on really, because the case you're making, Art, is that we need to enhance civic education. That's a point that Representative Hamilton had made a couple of minutes ago that I hadn't followed up on yet. Representative Hamilton.
And use this program to be a multiplier effect immediately.
Yeah, we will consider that, but I want to ask Representative Hamilton, picking up on Art's point, how do you think we should enhance civic education in this state and in this country? Art, thank you very much for the call and the great question.
Well, John, Art makes a critical point. A lot of people are very cynical, skeptical about our system, not without reason, but to the point where it causes them to withdraw from the process. Art makes the point that participation makes you feel good, in effect, and I think it does. It diminishes your cynicism. It diminishes your skepticism of the system. It educates you as to how to get things done and how hard it is to get them done. But in the end, you walk away with a feeling of considerable satisfaction that you've tried to do your part as a citizen to move the country forward. We have to convey that sense of accomplishment, the sense of necessity, to young people and to others about the importance of being a citizen. Justice Brandeis said the most important title in a democracy is the title of citizen. And citizens have to step forward or the system will not work. And that means they have to learn through civic education and practice at all levels how to make it work. And if they don't do that, the country's in a lot of trouble.
I want to ask, you know, you served in the House for 34 years. What prompted you to decide that the House was going to be, in effect, your home? Because I know you had a sterling reputation here in the state. There had to have been entreaties to have you run for statewide office at points along the way. I know you were often mentioned as a presidential or vice presidential possibility. What drove the decision to say, no, I think I can get the most done here in the House of Representatives?
Well, I came to a number of crossroads in my career, as everybody does, and I reflected on where I was and where I might go. I decided I liked what I was doing. I decided that I each year was getting a little better at it, or at least I thought I was. I decided that I could make a contribution to the direction and the success of my country in doing what I was doing. I decided that I had a pretty good balance in the work I was doing, my obligations to family, my obligations elsewhere. And so I was pleased with the balance, if you would, of my life and where I was. I was tempted several times to take a plunge, but for one reason or another, came back to being quite satisfied what I was doing and the contributions I was making.
Well, and you've never entirely left. You know, you obviously headed the 9/11 Commission. We've talked about the work that you've done with former Senator Lugar. You were part of an informal kind of group of advisors for former President Barack Obama. So it's in that spirit I'm going to ask this question. Do you enjoy being an elder statesman? Is that satisfying for you?
It's nice to be at the table and to be able to express yourself. I've known and worked with 9 presidents. I do not know President Trump. They have strengths and weaknesses like all individuals. But one thing I was sure of is that they need help. That job is like no other job in the world. And they can be the smartest person in the room or the dumbest. Whoever they are, they need help. And I decided I should try to give whatever help I could. That continued after I left the Congress. And in some ways, the contributions I made there were deeply satisfying. I think the 9/11 Commission restructured the government, the Department of Homeland Security, the Director of National Intelligence, created a whole different mood and atmosphere in the country on Homeland Security. Iraq Study Group likewise changed the course of the Iraq War because of the recommendations we made, I believe. And you look back and say, well, we did a good day's work and contributed to making things a little better for America. That's a deeply, deeply satisfying feeling. And I've been pleased to have it for a good many years, and it continues to this day.
You mentioned you did not know President Trump. We've only got about a minute left. If you were able to talk with him, what would you tell him? What advice would you give him?
Well, I don't think he'd pay much attention to any advice I'd give him, but he's got to respect the country, the Constitution, and the institutions. He's got to see beyond how it impacts himself, but the country. He's got to see the terribly important role the President of the United States plays in educating our children, in guiding the country, in contributing to a better world. I just don't feel that President Trump has his arms around the office of the presidency and the influence for good it can be if you conduct yourself properly.
Well, that, I think, is a wonderful last word. Representative Hamilton, I'd like to thank you for what has been, at least from my end, an absolutely fascinating conversation. It has been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, John. Good to be with you. All the best to you and your important work at Franklin.
Same to you, sir. And I'd also like to thank our listeners for some great questions. As always, it is a tremendous pleasure to be able to do this show for what it remains the smartest audience in radio. And we will be back on Tuesday. I will look forward to talking with all of you again. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.